Have you ever been falsely accused? How did you feel? When you know the accusation is absolutely not true, it hurts. And the truth is related to our relationship with the accuser. If it's someone we hardly know, we soon forget it. On the other hand, if it's someone very close to us, like a parent or a child or a spouse, then the hurt goes deep, really deep. And how do you respond? Have you ever wondered how God must have felt when the angel closest to him, the one to whom he had given the best of his wisdom and glory, the one in whom he had placed the most trust, started spreading malicious talk about him? How would he respond? How would he disprove the accusations once and for all? They say that actions speak louder than words. You know, talk is cheap. Rather than trying to settle it with a war of words, God let the actions of the accuser speak for themselves. And planet Earth is caught in that action. I'm in it, and so are you. God is love, therefore he risked war. So let's explore in more depth what God tells us about these accusations and the way he is letting the action clarify the truth or falsehood of the talk. So please join us as we investigate the beginnings of this epic story. Peter, it's an incredible thought to think that war began in heaven.
It is. Most people think of heaven as a paradise. They think of it as a beautiful place. And to think that war began there is you know, a shock to most people, but that's what the Bible reveals. It talks about the two great forces in this war as God being the supreme being in the universe, and this other being called Lucifer or Satan or the devil as being this very powerful being, but nevertheless a created being. In the book of Ezekiel in the Old Testament, it talks about God talking here. It says, you were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you. And so what this reveals here is that Lucifer or the devil was a created being in the beginning, and he was perfect, made perfect, but that sin or iniquity was found in him.
Danielle, what was the core issue that led to Lucifer's sin or his rebellion or this war?
Yeah, sad to say, it's a core issue that most of us deal with at some level at some stage, and that is the issue of self. You know, even the very word Antichrist, which we often hear in association with Satan or the devil, in the Greek means against, or more correctly, in place of Christ. If we have a look at Isaiah chapter 14, verses 12 to 14, we see that come through very clearly. It says here, "How you are the fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation. On the farthest sides of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." I.
So in actual fact, Lucifer was wanting to be like God.
Yeah. He wanted the power, the status, all of that, but he didn't want the character. He didn't want the character of God.
James, tell us a bit more about this war in heaven. I mean, as you know, we've been saying, it's an incredible thought, isn't it?
I think it's a remarkable thought because, as Peter said, heaven is a place that we all aspire to. When I was young, there was a song, "Heaven Must Be There Because I Don't Want to Live Here Any Longer." That was a hit here in Australia for the Eurogliders, if I remember correctly. But
you're showing your age,
James. Yeah, I am. Well, what can I say? And my interests. But we see in that there was this war, and we find a sort of a little bit more of a description in the book of Revelation, chapter 12, and we can just read this through. "And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So I think, importantly, we see this struggle over the issue that Danielle mentioned. Satan wanted to replace God and not accepting his place as a created being. He wanted to replicate or unseat God. And we have this war, but of course the war is over in heaven because the devil was eventually lost and was cast out. Unfortunately for us, the Bible also tells us where he ended up, right here.
It's interesting to contrast the words, the actions, and the motives of God compared to the words, the actions, and the motives of Lucifer, because the Bible depicts this absolutely beautiful planet, resplendent in its glory, that God creates for a purpose, and that is to put two newly created beings on, Adam and Eve. And then we find Lucifer attempting to undermine that. And it becomes clear as you read the story that God warns Adam and Eve that there is a deception that will come to them, and he warns them of how to avoid that. And it comes in the form of a tree. He says there are two trees. One is the tree of life, one is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he warns them not to eat of that tree, and thereby gives them the choice of choosing whether they'll stay loyal to God or whether they will obey the influence of an enemy.
I guess choice becomes very important, James.
Well, I think it is, because as we've talked about in other discussions, for us to serve God and to have a relationship with him, we have to love him. But there's no way to force people to love you, because once you have a relationship based on coercion, you can't have the freedom that's required to have love. So if you go back to the beginning of the story in Genesis, you see that when God put Adam and Eve on earth, he gave them the entire garden, but because he wanted to give them a choice so that every day they could choose to love him or not, he gave them the opportunity to eat from one tree that was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And if they made that choice to disobey him and to eat of that tree, it was a sign not just simply of disobedience, but of their lack of trust or their disrespect or their lack of love for God.
The attack that Satan has on God through this whole great controversy is an attack on love, is an attack on the character of God in its very essence.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because character, I guess that when God made Adam and Eve, he made everything except their character, in the sense that character has to be developed by the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you develop character except that you have a choice? You can't develop character without a choice. Mm-hmm. And God warned them, as you said, Peter.
Yeah, he tells them in Genesis chapter 2 that don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If you do, you're going to die. And then we see that Lucifer approaches them in the guise of a serpent in chapter 3 of Genesis. And I'll just read some of this. This is Genesis chapter 3. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. The first thing that Lucifer does in the guise of this serpent is he undermines God's authority by actually placing words in God's mouth, saying, has God said you can't eat of any of the trees? And then, of course, the woman says, no, there's just one tree that we can't eat of. And then the serpent goes on to say, well, you're not going to die if you disobey God. You're not going to die. Whereas God had said exactly the opposite.
One of the things that I discovered when I first began to study the Bible was a concept that almost blew me away, was the fact that sometimes in our thinking of life, we only see ourselves and our small community. But when you begin to study the Bible, the thing that just blew my mind was the fact that we are in a war, a cosmic war that's going on, and that we are not spectators, but we are actually actors in that great drama. And the text that I remember reading for the first time many years ago, and that, as I say, really shocked me in the sense that I'd never thought of this before, I just want to read so that everybody, maybe some of our viewers may not have heard this verse or read this verse before. And I just want to read 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 9. Just listen to this. Look. For I think, this is Paul talking, St. Paul, he says, for I think that God has displayed us, the apostles last, as men condemned to death, for we have been made a spectacle to the world, both to angels and to men. And I notice the margin says the spectacle like a theatre. The picture is here like going to the theatre, and you see the drama is being enacted before you on the stage. And very often, because we are sitting there, we see if you were to judge a whole play on just one act, you'd probably get the wrong story. You need to see the thing in entirety. And the Bible gives us that entirety. James, what's more of the bigger story that perhaps the Bible gives us than rather than just we as individuals, rather than the whole universe is involved with this matter of rebellion against God?
One of my favorite books in the Bible is the book of Job. Now, we don't know this for certain, but a lot of biblical scholars think that this is the oldest book in the Bible. And Job starts off with a very interesting scenario, and that is that the sons of God gather in heaven and the devil comes among them. And there's this conversation that takes place where Job makes an accusation, and God, to refute his accusation, says that there is a man on earth who follows me, who's righteous, who's got faith, and who loves me. And that's Job. And Satan goes back and says, of course he follows you because you've given him all kinds of blessings. And then the whole story revolves around those blessings being taken away and Satan attacking him, and yet Job remains faithful. Even he says, I'll trust God even if he kills me. And then finally, Job is rewarded for his faith. But what's interesting about this story is it illustrates the exact point that you were making from your text in Corinthians, and that is that what happens here on earth is not just about you or me or the human race. It's about the character of God. Satan saying is a point, making an accusation against God's character, in a way the entire universal order at stake. Who's going to be in charge? Which side are the rest of the angels going to take? It is implied in Job that there are other created beings, and if you think that God created one world, there's no reason to believe that he may not have created others as well. And the question is, which side will these beings take? Which side will the angels take? And to make his point, the devil points to the earth and the corruption on the earth and the unfaithfulness of people, and makes the claim that God is unjust and that no one can follow him, and all the claims that we're used to and that are described in the Bible. But when individuals do choose to follow God, when they do choose a path of love and faithfulness, that is refutes the devil's accusation. And when we have, in a sense, when we have faith, it is seen by a far greater audience than just ourselves on this earth.
But it all comes down to the character of God and the fact that God is love, and that right from the beginning, Satan attacked God's character. Is God really love?
Does he mean what he says?
Does he mean what he says? Mm-hmm. And like we saw in the episode of the Beyond series with the robots, you know, had God just made us into robots, let us do what he wanted to do so sin would never come into it. That's not an act of love, as James explained before. So God had to give a period of time where all the sons of God, all the angels who had been lied to, were forced to make a decision. Is God a God of love or is he not? You know, should it be Satan reigning? He'd had to let things play out for a lifetime to make that decision.
Peter, I want to ask you a question. Following on from what Danielle was saying here, this is a very question that people ask over and over again. If God is all-powerful, why didn't he kill the devil and get rid of this whole thing?
That's a good question. I mean, when Danielle talks about the central issue being the character of God, yes, I mean, yes. I wholeheartedly agree with that. The central question is, can God be trusted?
Yes.
And when you put that in the context of your question, is why didn't God just wipe out Lucifer straight away? Mm-hmm. Had he done that, I don't believe the question would have been answered. Can God be trusted?
Wouldn't he have got rid of the problem?
I don't believe so, because we have to understand that Lucifer is pictured in the Bible as a very powerful angelic being, a very influential angelic being, one that God had privileged. He'd given him position, and therefore he had a lot of influence. It says he was the anointed cherub who covers. He's a very prominent cherub angelic being in heaven, and therefore other angels may have looked to him as an authority in his right sphere. And had God destroyed him outright, then they may have had questions in their minds about whether God could be trusted. Do we serve God out of love, or do we serve God out of fear?
So, James, if God had killed the devil, he would have got, as Peter's saying, he would have got service and loyalty, but not based on love, based on fear.
Absolutely. And I think it would have left a very large question mark. If you create beings with free will, the ability to choose one way or the other, even if they obeyed you out of fear, you wouldn't necessarily have their heart, and you would not have necessarily convinced their mind. And in the long run, you might have sort of an outward obedience throughout throughout creation, whether it's in heaven or in other places, but you would never have been able to convince people in their hearts and their minds that this. That you are, that God is who he says he is, that his ways lead to happiness and peace and everything that we aspire to. After the experience in this world, however, I don't think that for the rest of time, people are going to look at the sort of, if you like, the experiment with sin and look back on it. After this great controversy, this epic story is completed, I don't think anyone's going to look back and say, boy, that wasn't such a bad idea. Let's try that all over again. Let's have starvation again. Let's have murder again. Let's have child abuse again. Let's have all the evils, the substance abuse, everything that we deal with in this life. You know, sometimes I when you watch the news in the morning and it's stories of missing kids or whatever it is, you look at it and you just think, like, how long, how much longer can we go on in this mess?
Yes, yes.
And I think that's what everyone's going to, anyone who looks back on this history.
Peter, how would you react if, when you went home tonight, you said to your wife and you greet her and she said, look, the only reason I'm staying around here is because I'm frightened of you. Because love must have something, it must have freedom.
Mm. I think you'd be very disappointed, wouldn't you, to think that your wife or somebody close to you only loved you for other reasons than who you are, loving you for who you are. I mean, I believe that the epic battle that is described here between God on one hand and Satan on the other, I think it helps to put life into context because the Bible talks about this battle, but we're in the midst of it now. Human beings have been in the midst of it for some time. But it also helps us to understand that there was a time when this battle was not going on, and there will be a time when it's no longer going on. Because I remember when I was growing up and I hadn't been introduced to the Bible or to God, and I used to think, well, good and evil, they just exist. They always have existed. They always will exist. And it there's nothing I can do to change that. There's nothing I can do to contribute to one side or the other. It's going to happen. And so there was a kind of sense of helplessness in that regard, whereas the Bible tells us we are moving towards a resolution of this problem.
Danielle, we're in this mess. Adam and Eve made a mistake and we're all in the mess with them. Mm-hmm. How does the Bible express the fact that we are in this war?
Yeah. Well, I think we need to remember what happened in the beginning. There was a war in heaven. It was a spiritual war. The battle began as a spiritual battle. And while we are here in a physical sense, that spiritual battle is very much still going on around us and is very influential. I'd like to share, you know, an illustration with you in a minute. But let's first have a look at Ephesians chapter 6, in verse 12. It says here that we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. It is a spiritual battle.
Peter, we've noticed the universe is watching on, mm-hmm. so that we are all actors in this great drama yeah. that's being played out in the whole universe. All these other worlds, the angels, Paul says, are watching. What's going to be ultimately what's going to happen?
Well, as you mentioned before, we're not in the stands. We're actually participating in the battle, whether we like it or not. I noticed in Luke 11:23, it says, this is the words of Jesus himself. He says, "He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters." And so we might think, well, I can sit on the fence of this one. But actually, that's not the case. To not make a decision on whose side you're going to be on is a decision in itself. But God is going to ultimately bring about the end of evil and suffering and wickedness. It's not always going to be the way it is right now, and we can make a choice about which side we want to be on. Do we trust God, or would we rather serve the other side?
James, one of the things that we all are aware of in our insurance agreements, mm-hmm. when something happens like a hailstorm or an earthquake and something, they're always referred to as acts of God. Is that the way the Bible pictures these things?
You know, I've seen that, and it's always funny, isn't it? Nobody ever says, "I woke up this morning in perfect health. It was an act of God. My child kissed me and told me that she loved me. Wow, it's an act of God." Which, of course, anything to do with love and health and life, those are the acts of God. Now, when it comes to bad things, we know a couple things. First of all suffering and all pain are acts of results of sin, not acts of God, not God's will, because God is love and his intention towards us is good. That said, we also know that God is all-powerful and all-knowledgeable, and the question sometimes comes up, well, if God's all-powerful, why does he permit this to happen? And is by permitting sin to occur, is he sort of complicit? And this is, in some ways, a complicated question to answer, but I think we have to go back to what we were talking about previously, and that is that if this world was perfect, it would not be a sinful world. And if it was not a sinful world, and the reason it's a sinful world is because of a choice that was made. If you couldn't make that choice, you couldn't have free will. If you can't have free will, you can't have love. So that's sort of the, if you like, the sort of the knock-on effect. Certainly, as Peter was saying earlier, God will make all things new, and we and those who follow him will be redeemed into a world that is mended. But until then, yes, we live in a world, a sinful world, where terrible things happen, but the only alternative to that is a lack of free will, and with a lack of free will, you extinguish love.
Well, Peter, you can't have freedom of will without the possibility that a person will choose to do the wrong thing. Otherwise, you are, as Danielle says, you're a robot.
Yeah. And I think one line in that episode too was, you can't have love without risking rebellion.
It's interesting to listen to James' comments, because We do think about the fact that there's evil in the world. We recognise that. But there is good in the world. There is love in the world. There is the evidence of God's hand in the world. And we see that too.
Yes. So as we have been noticing, as we've studied together, what is going on today is part of the epic story, the difference between right and wrong. We see the evidence worked out in our lives. And so often we're prone to question, where is God in all this? The Bible helps us to see that God is a God of love. And while terrible things have happened, one day soon Jesus is going to restore that perfect Garden of Eden that he started with is going to be restored again. And we've noticed that the rebellion started in heaven. It didn't start on this earth. And then it came down and spread here to earth. And in it now, you and I are not just spectators, but we are actors. And Jesus' death on the cross guarantees that if we choose to do the right thing and we choose Christ as our Savior, then ultimately we will triumph with Christ when he returns. There's a verse over here in the book of Deuteronomy which always appeals to me very much. This is Deuteronomy, the 30th chapter and verse 19. And God says, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death. For it goes on to say then, blessing as well as cursing. Therefore, choose life. You see, God here is appealing to us to choose life, that both you and your descendants may live. The choice is ours, the same as the choice was Adam and Eve's back in the beginning. And God is appealing to us like a parent who loves his or her child. And in desperation, won't you choose to do the right thing? Won't you choose to follow in the path of righteousness? That's God's appeal to you, and it's God's appeal to me. And I trust today that God will help us to choose him and to choose life. Let's just bow our heads in prayer. Our Father in heaven, I thank you again today for the wonderful choice that we have as we have studied that rebellion began in heaven. Then it came down onto this earth, but we are not left in the mire. We're not left in the dirt. You then entered history by dying on the cross to give us the possibility of eternal life. And today we must choose that ourselves individually. Bless every viewer. Bless every one of us today, I pray, for Christ's sake. Amen.